Stephen Mayne, hello.
Hi, Lindy, how are you?
I'm very well. You are, of course, shareholder activist extraordinaire. China has been your major focus in the last couple of days. Investment here in Australia.
Well, it is quite an amazing situation where the federal government has quietly told 10 different Chinese government companies applying to launch takeovers or buy stakes in Australian resource stocks to cool their heels and to withdraw their applications and to give them a bit more time to consider it. So what we actually have here at the moment is a quite unprecedented, there's a global resources grab going on at the moment, and a global food grab, if you like, as well, commodities more generally. But, the Rudd government is really internally wrestling right now with this question of an open slather approach to Chinese government-controlled takeovers of our resource companies at the same time as they've just been wrestling with the whole torch relay difficulties and Kevin Rudd's visit to Beijing. So today, one of the bigger companies, Midwest Corporation, has gone into a trading halt with the speculation that Sinosteel is going to lift their takeover bid to close to $1.5 billion. Yesterday, the Foreign Investment Review Board did approve another Chinese company, Sinopec, to invest $600 million to become the first foreign government operator of an Australian oil project up there, the Puffin project in the Timor Sea. So we are seeing some approvals come through, but clearly the government is nervous about the scale of this and this avalanche of Chinese government money that is literally going into big and small resources.
How do they stop that? And well, how long can they do it for?
Well, Australia traditionally has a liberal regime when it comes to foreign investment. The only ones we've really blocked over the years are people like that crook Robert Maxwell buying, The Age, which Paul Keating just said, you're unfit, mate, and Woodside being sold to Shell because the argument was that Woodside would hold back the development of the Northwest Shelf, would put their foot on the pipe, if you like. So, but in terms of just a straight, you're a foreign government, we don't like you.
Yes. It's just what it is.
We don't like
that amount of power that you'll be bringing and exerting in this country.
Well, we've never had a concern. We had no problems with the Singapore government buying control of Optus, which gave them all sorts of sensitive satellite dishes and defence information going over their networks, which the Defence Department was a bit nervous about 6 or 7 years ago when that happened, but it went through. So, it is just quite an unusual situation. And today, another little tiddler company called Apollo Minerals has announced that a Chinese government company wants to go to 20% of it, and it's only got a few little iron ore sort of prospects out there. So they're literally just any company which has iron ore in its name, the Chinese government is basically out there buying stakes. Cape Lambert Resources, Murchison Metals, Rio Tinto, Midwest Corp, MacArthur Coal, they've poured a couple of $100 million into that. And they're also getting approval to do massive projects in their own right. Chinese company Chalco was given approval last year to do a $3 billion bauxite project up near Arakan. And another consortium of Chinese companies was given approval to do a $3 billion iron ore project in WA at the Okajee Port and Rail Project. So it's literally tens of billions of dollars, and they want to spend a lot more of their $1.8 trillion of foreign reserves to shore up their own development, which they see iron ore as the lifeblood of their great urbanisation and industrialisation. Australia's got the best resources in the world. And apart from Rio Tinto, they're literally making a play for virtually every other iron ore stock out there in Australia. And the Rudd government clearly has finally said, look, this is getting a bit too much for us.
Yes.
We need some time.
How much time did they say again? Were they planning to hold back, hold off?
Well, the process is that you to keep it private, you've got 30 days. And if the government objects over and above 30 days, it has to become public, and then it becomes another 90-day process. So the government is ringing up all these companies and saying, on the 29th day, can you please withdraw your application so this doesn't become public, so that we can then start the clock again on another 30 days? And then, of course, this has got on the front page of the papers, and we've got lawyers coming out saying, my Chinese client's been told to withdraw four times, and Malcolm Turnbull's buying in, And the Labor government's really saying nothing at this point because they don't want to upset foreign investors. They don't want to offend the Chinese.
No, how do you walk
but
that line?
Surely yes. You've got to have some concern about a communist totalitarian state snapping up literally, you know, dozens of wanting to buy another 10 different mining stock plays. It's just an avalanche and completely unprecedented.
It's 13 to 6. Stephen, just going back to the federal government stepping in about Chinese investment in Australia, how do the companies feel about that, that are being targeted?
Well, Sinosteel has so far been making a hostile bid for Midwest Corporation, which is an iron ore company in WA, so they have been trying to fend off the Chinese. The oil field investment I mentioned was friendly because basically this oil company, AED Oil, was pretty much going to the wall and the Chinese government pretty much rescued them. And the others have been a mixture of, yes, we welcome the investment. I mean, at one level, all the executives and the shareholders love the fact that there's a massive bubble in resource stocks. I mean, I've got 670 stocks. I was looking at a few of them today, and it's just literally only the mining stocks which are showing profits at the moment, and it's all totally driven by China. So it's an unusual effect of our economy is booming because of Chinese, you know, the fact that China is going to put an extra $35 billion into Australia from buying our stuff, but a specific section of the stock market is also booming from direct Chinese investments and perceptions of a further avalanche of direct Chinese investments. And the other interesting equation here, I was up at the Rio Tinto AGM in Brisbane on Thursday and was making the point to them, look, why are you based in London? Rio Tinto, you're Australia's biggest foreign investor. You've got more than $100 billion of assets in Australia. You've had a great run from Australian regulators and you've got no assets in the UK. Here's our government telling the Chinese to back off, yet why isn't the government telling Rio Tinto to at least not, you know, doff the cap to us and be based in Australia? And they're all sort of snooty. And, you know, I mean, the Rio Tinto board includes Sir Peter Sykes, Sir David Clementi, Sir Richard Sykes and Lord Kerr Kinlochard, amidst 11 other chaps. And, you know, there's only two Australian-based directors out of 15. The Australian shareholding's down to 15%. And it used to be run by Australians, now it's run by an American. And if we're going to tell the Chinese that they can't invest in Australia, then I think the Chinese are going to come back and say, well, what about Rio Tinto?
Yeah, that's interesting.
They're foreign too. And, you know, and this
so you're saying that the government is actually slack in those sorts of areas?
Well, I was telling Rio Tinto they should move to Australia because
they'll get a good run.
Well, they'll get a better run. That's right, because they've got all these issues like rail access in Western Australia, even little things like getting the Bougainville copper mine open again. I mean, the Labor government, you know, the Howard government was hopeless in the Pacific. The Labor government here had six ministers in PNG last week. There's a much better engagement with the region. That Bougainville copper mine is controlled by Rio Tinto out of London. If Rio was actually an Australian company and Australia had more skin in the game, then I think you might see ministers going up to PNG and saying, let's do something about getting this mine open. So from Rio Tinto's shareholder point of view, waving the Australian flag and being here, I think they're going to get a better run from Australian governments, which have got massive power over their ability to keep making a fortune out of their $100 billion plus investment in Australia with wall-to-wall Labor. And Labor is traditionally a lot more parochial on these issues than the Howard government. I mean, Rio Tinto hired John Howard's nephew, Lyle Howard, to look after government relations, you know, and basically Howard let them do whatever they liked and never sort of said, come on, let's be a bit more patriotic. But, I mean, the smoke signals are all there, particularly with this Chinese thing, that we might see a little bit of resource nationalism creeping into the agenda
in
Australia, which we're seeing the world over at the moment.
You've been in Perth as well, having a look at the battle for news production, really, and not production, but news reporting in Western Australia.
Yeah, it's funny how sort of, you know, dead tree industries like newspapers continue to bring all sorts of passions. We saw Rupert Murdoch buying up the Wall Street Journal last year and launching another bid for a Long Island newspaper, Newsday, wanting to spend $600 million. And now Kerry Stokes, who arguably has more personally invested in Australian media than either the Packers or the Murdochs these days, wanting to get control of his hometown paper. And for the first time ever in Australia, we actually saw a knockdown, drag-em-out proxy fight for control of a boardroom. And he literally had the situation of, you know, Kerry Stokes standing up, a billionaire in the audience, and making his pitch for 15 minutes to the punters of Perth to back the hometown hero. And he did a massive campaign. He did exclusive interviews on Channel 9. He did all sorts of, you know, which is the rival station. Mm. Massive press campaign, and basically came a real cropper. And only about 10 to 12% of the independent shareholders voted for the hometown boy. And he only got 40% of the vote and finished seventh out of 15 candidates. So Kerry Stokes, the sort of the banging the parochial drum as the Perth billionaire made good, didn't actually cut it with the shareholders, and he's got 20%. He's going to need to get to 30% if he's going to come back again.
Why? I mean, not why does he need to get to 30%, but why did he not cut it? Why did they reject him?
Well, when he bought into Channel 7, he didn't make a takeover bid. He just bought 19%, complained about the board, got himself on the board, installed himself as chairman, and kept creeping up the register. He's now got 43%. But he never made a takeover bid and paid a premium for control. And this time he wanted to do the same thing. He bought 20%. He wanted to come on as chairman. And I asked him at the meeting, I said, come on, Kerry, why don't you publicly commit to having an independent non-executive chairman, not you? And he wouldn't do it. So everyone just said, look, you know, you're just going to try and get control by the back door. You're not paying a proper price. So the institutions all rolled him, and he was quite humiliated at the end of it. So I think he's a fairly bruised billionaire, and I think he'll be writing out the checkbook to knock over this company. It's going to cost him another couple of hundred million to get control, though, I think.
Such an agitator. I love that about you. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Lindy.